Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. In business, many people think negotiation begins when the numbers come out. But what if negotiation actually starts much earlier, in the way we listen, ask questions, and build relationships? Well, today I'm going to be talking with Derek Chevalier, who is a negotiation strategist, a speaker, an author. He has many titles, but mostly he has spent decades helping executives, sales professionals, and entrepreneurs improve their results through smarter conversations. So we're going to look today at about why negotiation is really a relationship skill and how understanding value can change the way we communicate in business and why better listening and questioning can dramatically improve one's results. So welcome to the show, Derek.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that that introduction. I listened to that and I was like, who is that guy?
Yes, of course. Now I know I know that you have written and updated a book that's been around for a while that speaks to your expertise called Evolve or Be Slaughtered, which is kind of an interesting title. It has a subtitle. What's the subtitle? I can't remember.
Yeah, Negotiation for the 21st Century.
There you go. Perfect. Yep. So first of all, let's start with many people thinking that negotiation is usually about price or about getting the best deal. I know you see it differently. So how do you define negotiation today?
Well, negotiation, I don't necessarily redefine negotiation. So let's look at for everybody. Negotiation in a nutshell, if we look at dictionary.com, is going to sound something like two or more people or entities coming together to explore an issue or resolve a problem or challenge of some sort. So that's the process of negotiation. So the idea is that traditionally, my mentor was Chester Karas, who's still the largest negotiation seminar company in the world. And his background was working in the transactional negotiation. He worked for Howard Hughes. His background was in procurement. So a lot of the negotiating strategies and tactics that he brought forward revolve around transactional negotiation, right?
And so that makes sense. Yeah.
And he goes all the way back to 1970, and there's not much contemporary in negotiation prior to that. And after that, the big move was to Harvard, which was positional. So Dr. Karas is looking at transactional negotiation, which comes down to the dollars and the cents or the goods and the services that are being explained. Positional negotiation was standing back to say, well, hey, we, from a standpoint of politics or government issues, we need to look more at positions, we need to look more at policies and the way treaties and contracts get negotiated. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, right now there are three primary frameworks of negotiation, and the framework is just a set of principles or rules to use in conducting that negotiation, whether it's transactional or it's positional. Mm-hmm. The evolved negotiation was built in the 21st century and can be applied universally, whether it's transactional, rivets, or anything else. So the difference here is that we believe that instead of negotiating the challenge, that in the 21st century, we want to negotiate the people. So not the dollars and the cents,
right,
not the contract. And the reason is the contract and the dollars and the cents are inanimate. They don't think, they don't feel, they don't have empathy or anything else. They are the same. What is different and what does shift negotiation to negotiation are the human beings, and the human beings are the ones that are going to make the choices around how that issue gets negotiated. So go ahead.
So what I wanted to say there was, so that happens before the actual traditional negotiation starts.
Absolutely. That
Right.
happens the
Yeah.
moment the contact happens.
Right.
So in the moment that I begin that process. So when you say two or more parties coming together, that could be an email, that could be a phone call, that could be an RFP, an RFQ, a con whenever. And that's when it really starts.
It's first impressions. It's seeing someone's first impression of a LinkedIn profile. I have to say that because that's what I do. It's
Sure.
all of those things that can happen before. It's judgment that happens before
Yes.
you even talk to the person, for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. So how does that, in essence, well, I kind of know the answer, I think, but I want to know from you, the expert. How does that affect, so the person coming in to make the sale or to do the deal or get the best price? How does that affect the negotiation when all that's happened ahead of time?
Sure. Well, what's happened ahead of time sets the stage for what's going to happen when we come together.
Right.
Because during that period, that is when each side is really considering and thinking about their assumptions and their presumptions about what's going to happen. And here's an important part about traditional or classic negotiation versus evolved negotiation. Both Dr. Karas and Harvard and others will suggest that you should go into the negotiation and aim high. That's Dr. Karas, one of Dr. Karas's rule. Harvard comes in and says, well, you ought to make sure that you have a BATNA or best alternative to a negotiated agreement. And this is standard fare in negotiation for decades, that I go in, if we talk about you buy low, sell high, and if I'm buying something, then I start very low, and then I work my way up to see who I'm negotiating with. I law Dr. Karas's rule, aim high. Well, after working with Dr. Karas for a lot of years, I started to ask myself, well, the rule, aim high. So, aim high based on what? So we're aiming high on generally, then people are aiming high based upon what the first ask is. So, I'm asking $1 million for my home, and that may be for me, aim high. Now, if it's real estate, I'm going to go look at comps in my neighborhood. But there also may be other reasons because there's a lot of things that the comps don't show. I just painted my house. So I'm asking $1.2 million for a house that other people are selling for $1 million. So $1.2 million, and that's my high. So I think to myself, it's worth $1.2 million, but I really want to get $1.5 million. So you come in and you are want to buy my house. And you're thinking, how low can I get this house for? So we know whatever product is being sold, if it's procurement and sales, there's no mystery about what each obligations is. My job is to buy it low, and your job is to sell it high, or vice versa. So the question is, what is low and what is high? And ultimately, that just becomes my opinion or assumption based on what you're asking for, but also based on my training. Because if I think aim high, so and I'm a buyer, then I go into your $1.5 million or $1.2 million home and I say, well, I can offer you 800,000. And then you say, well, that's ridiculous. And we go back and forth and we barter, right? And then, so let's say that at $1.2 million, you ultimately get the house for $1.2 million, let's just say. Or let's say you get the house for $1 million when I was asking $1.2 million. So how do you feel? You were asking $1.2 million, you really needed $1 million, and you got $1 million.
Yeah, so you feel okay, just not super great.
Right.
Right? Because that really was your bottom line.
Right.
Yeah.
So I say, well, I didn't really want to spend a million. I offered 800,000. I didn't want to spend a million, but I spent a million because you pointed out some things. So the two of us walk away and we think many people will call that a win-win outcome. We didn't get everything we want, but we got most of what we wanted. We were close within the range of what we went in there expecting. And we walk away. Now, was that a win-win outcome? What would you say? What do you think most of your audience will say?
Yeah, that's a good question. I there's so many factors, right? There's just so
Yes.
many factors. I think the person, I don't know. I mean, it could go either way.
Well, actually, no, it
Oh,
can't, because
okay.
in evolved negotiation, we're going to break that down. We're
Okay.
going to break that down quantitatively. When you came up with a million too, who was in the room? You. When I came up with 800,000 or 800, who was in the room? Me. So that defines the roles of each people. It was you and whoever was on your team, me
Right.
and who was ever on my team. Did you actually ever see my notes or hear my discussion? Were you ever involved in
No.
any of my things? No, and I was not involved in yours. So we are unilateral entities coming together, which is the definition of competition, two unilateral in evolved negotiation, two unilateral entities coming together to negotiate an issue. So the reality is that all you really know about is what your goal was and what you set. And all I really know is what you told me about what you were willing to do. So I came into it with a unilateral perspective, how low I wanted to go. You had a unilateral perspective, how high you wanted to get. And we both walked away with a unilateral perspective. There's no way to determine what the
Right.
win-win was. Quantitatively, it cannot happen.
Right.
And yet perception trumps reality. What's that mean? You walk away feeling like it was a win. Well, it was a win for you in
Yeah.
your mind, but you have no actual idea. So in evolved negotiation, we do not espouse that people determine whether or not the outcome was win-win based upon a goal they set before they walked into the room. We would say that the outcome of a negotiation, first of all, should generally be determined later, after down the road, when you really look at all the, especially if it's a relationship or a contract, because I can feel great about the contract, then you don't perform. So that's not such a win-win, right?
Right.
So ultimately, what we think is the outcome should be determined by how much of the outcome was based on information or insight that I did not have when I walked into the room.
So how much conversation went on? How much?
Well, not just that. How much, for instance, I had data when I walked in and I had ideas that when I went on. So our objective is to get each party to share as much information as they previously were unwilling to share, data and background that you would say, I'd ask you, well, why are you asking a million too? And you would say, well, because I just remodeled the home. Well, I don't know what that means. So now you would say, well, here is a folder full of all of the invoices for the work that I had done, the painting, the this, the that. Okay, well, that's data I didn't have, which
Right.
substantiates. And if they're, assuming they're legitimate, and I might want to check that out, a
Yeah.
le legitimate, legitimate bills. I would have more insight. Now that may turn around and cause me to say, well, wait a second, the house may be worth more because I'm not going to have to put any money into the house, and I have warranties from all of these people. Now, what did I share with you? I might share with you and say, you know what? The reality is I was asking 850 because I didn't have insight about why you were asking a million too. So now we have gone past the unilateral and come toward
Definitely.
a cooperative, right, negotiation in which we're sharing data that previously was not being shared. Now, the goal would be that you would ultimately share everything that you had with me, and I would share everything that I had with you. But the reality is that that is rarely going to happen. You know, in a transactional negotiation that's not significant, maybe, but in a
Yeah, a
major
big one.
relationship or partnership, that's never going to happen.
Well, we also in that example that you just gave too, we also have to realize that the buyer and the seller are probably not in the room. It's the real estate agents that we have to trust to make to have those conversations and bring back to
Sure,
us. So that's
sure.
another whole thing about trust and so forth. And I think the biggest piece that I'm hearing here is that listening is so important as well. That we it's something that we talk about often in business, but a lot of people misunderstand what effective listening really means and what so because we say we're listening, but half of it goes over our head. So what
Right.
would you say is important in terms of strategic listening, effective listening, active listening, all of that?
Yes, and we call that effective communication, you with a which is a bag that uses all those tools. One
Okay.
of the greatest tools that I think that folks ought to use is reframing. So I might say to you, well, as I understand it, what you just said was that effective communication or listening involves actually paying attention to what the other person is saying and making sure that what they're saying is, first of all, what they mean, and second of all, that you have an actual good understanding of what that means.
Exactly.
So that's reframing. Now, here is where reframing is a double-edged sword. First of all, I can tell you that if reframing, depending on who you read and how you goes, people might say you ask the last five words or six words that repeat the last five or six words that someone said and said, as I understand it, you're saying, and I repeat five or six words. I can tell you this. 9 out of 10 times when we reframe what someone says using exactly what they said verbatim, they're going to stop you and say, no, that's not what I mean.
9 times out of 10.
Absolutely,
Oh, wow.
because there's a difference between an involved negotiation. What we talk about is the difference between what is said and what is meant or interpreted by the other person. So, in evolved negotiation, effective communication occurs when there is congruence of meaning. That means I say something, you listen, and then you say, well, Derek, I think what you're saying is XYZ. And I say, absolutely, that's exactly what I mean. And you say, oh, I understand. We both agree that we both understand, and that is congruence of meaning. And that is where a negotiation where communication takes place.
Yeah, and that can get misconstrued very quickly. You're right. You're absolutely right. We think we're listening. What was the frame I used to say something to my daughter when they were little? I used to say I'd ask or tell ask them to do something or whatever, and then of course they didn't do it. And I think I would say, well, let me know when you're ready, and let me know, and I'll tell you again when I think you're listening or when I know you're listening or something like that. I forget exactly, but it's like because you weren't listening. It's very evident. Yeah. And it is an art to listen properly.
It absolutely, and but it's also an important part of negotiation because here is a tactical reality. When people listen effectively and, for instance, establish congruence of meaning, we both agree that we both understand what the point is, we've by definition communicated. One of the tactical realities of that is that when somebody has congruence of meaning, both parties feel heard. The other party feels like, oh, Derek heard me, he hears me. Now, what a lot of people do psychologically then is to say, oh, since most people don't listen and Derek is listening, then, and I say, yes, we have congruence of meaning, many people will actually believe that because we have a congruence of meaning, that I agree with them.
Huh.
I
So
may not
that's an
agree with you
assumption.
at that exactly
Yeah.
what that is. And so that can be used tactically. I could establish communication with you, have congruence. So as I understand it, what, but you just gave me insight into which closing strategy to use versus another closing strategy because you just confirmed some point of view. When you didn't think at all that that was going to inform which tool I might use to sell you something.
Yes, absolutely. I that reminds me of stories like going to buy a new car and going into the office when the in the dealership and your partner saying to you, "Don't say anything. Let them talk first," right? Whatever. So that yeah, you don't give anything away or and that kind of thing. And so yeah, that's definitely dangerous and puts you at a disadvantage when you.
Yes, but the other person is completely unaware that it's happening. That's the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, you don't
Well,
even know
yeah.
that it's happening. And let and you know, we just did a poll in LinkedIn, had
Yeah.
19,000, almost 20,000 impressions, and the question was very simple. It was negotiation skills and expertise can be acquired through experience alone. And 19,000 impressions, we had 2 or 3,000 votes on that. And not unexpectedly to me, the vast majority of people concluded that yes, indeed, you can acquire negotiation skill and expertise through experience alone. And of course, in the book, Evolve or Be Slaughtered, I talk about that and say, most people are too stubborn and too lazy to do what it takes to learn negotiation skills. This is why you have people saying, yeah, I don't need to learn that formally. I can learn it because it's self-serving. If I can learn through experience, I don't need to read a book. I don't need to listen to a podcast. I don't need to do anything else. I'm already know everything I need to know, which is ridiculous if you say to yourself, well, you didn't learn to ride a car that way. You don't want your doctor, your optometrist, you don't want your dentist, mechanic, or any, or certainly not the pilot of a plane who learned by, you know, crashing planes and then
Right.
suddenly began to fly them correctly. But you want to tr you know, you want to negotiate millions and millions and trillions of dollars by learning on the job, so to speak.
Yeah, interesting. It made me think also of gamblers. I don't know why that came to my head, but.
Yes. I just read a fantastic book that I would recommend to everyone. It's by Maria Kennikova, and it's called The Biggest Bluff. And she is
Okay.
a psychologist, and she, with no background in the World Poker Tour, wanted to know whether or not gambling and poker in particular was a skill or was it luck? Kind of like there
Oh,
was a great
interesting.
movie with D Matt Damon about that
Yeah.
same thing. So she actually went to a couple of the top world poker player champions and asked them if they would mentor her from day one, no background or experience. And her objective was to sit down at a world poker table within a year, which was phenomenally ambitious.
Yes.
And the book goes through the entire iteration in which within a year, she won several hundreds of thousands of dollars and became a world-class poker player because it is, in fact, a skill game, and it is a skill game of communication and people. So they actually talk about all the psychology involved in knowing every player at the table, understanding their tell, understanding their philosophy, their background as an important part of
How
the
they bet.
skill. Yes, and she was saying the greatest players in the world have very, very high levels. They're disciplined, they're focused. They're not what people are thinking. They're ambling around the world. These are focused people who study, who read, who write, and they study human behavior,
Exactly.
right?
It's very interesting. I might have to read that book. That
Yeah,
sounds
it's a great one.
fascinating.
Great one.
Oh, that's so cool. I don't know why. It just floated into my head about
Sure.
that, because I do watch poker and I have
Me
played
too.
poker, and it's fascinating. I'm not very
Sure.
good at it, but anyway, they see you coming in Vegas when you come from from the city that you've come to spend
Yeah.
your vacation there, and they come to take your money. So there
You
you
know,
go.
there's a great quote in the Matt Damon movie. In the very beginning of the movie, he's going around the house and he's finding all these spots where he's hidden money and he's going to be going out and gambling. So he gets all his money, and just as he walks out the door, the movie begins with him saying, "Listen, here's the thing. If you don't know who the sucker is in your first 30 minutes in the table, then you are the sucker."
You are the
And
sucker.
that is true in a negotiation too. And for all those people who think they can acquire skill and expertise by experience alone, guess what? You are the sucker, because if you're negotiating with somebody who is trained, they're going to peg you in 20 minutes and you'll never know what hit you.
Fascinating. Back to my question, see if they make any sense anymore. Many people feel uncomfortable negotiating because they worry about conflict. How can shifting the focus to relationships possibly change that experience?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And that is the difference between demeanor and intent, something I talk very much about in Evolve. Demeanor is the way we present. So that's
Right.
the tone of voice. That's the speed at which I'm talking. That is the bass, medium, trim, or treble, part frequency of my voice, if you will. So, and that may be how calm I am, hand gestures that I'm using, eye contact, head movement. So the demeanor that I come in with, many, many, many people mistake demeanor for intent. And one of the most powerful tools of a snuff or evolved negotiator is understanding that 9 out of 10 people are going to read your demeanor and ignore your intent. And 9 out of 10 people don't understand the difference. So the demeanor is that I come in and I'm very calm, I'm cheerful, and I'm laughing, and I'm jovial, and I'm personable, and I'm attentive, and I listen, and I care about you.
Do you have
And
an air
then
of confident about yourself, too
and
confident
there
as
may or
well?
may not be. Now, that's
Okay.
going back, we're negotiating people and not products or contracts. So that means that my demeanor when I enter a negotiation is going to be dictated by who you are. So
Okay, because I would want to mirror you as well,
now we're talking about mirror and matching. So part of the due diligence I've done and during the preparations and the negotiations is I've come to some conclusion about your demeanor. That's why I'm going online, I'm watching your podcasts, I'm listening to do in which I can go out and find. And so now when I come in the room and I find that you're very laid back, then I'm probably going to be pretty laid back. I'm going to mirror and match a lot of your behaviors, which is going to give the impression that we have a common demeanor. So demeanor is the way that I act, and demeanor is a great substitute for intent or cover for intent. So now, what does that mean? What I mean is very simply is, let's just put it this way. Jeffrey Dahmer did not walk up and go, "Well, you'd be great for lunch." Is he had a, you know, he had a
Yeah,
great
yeah.
personable demeanor,
Yeah.
and but that was not his intent.
No, the
Right.
intent is to pounce later when you expect
Exactly.
it,
So the
right?
entire reason of using a particular demeanor is to create an opportunity to execute intent. So part of what I'm interested in is there a congruence between the intent and the demeanor of the person? And that in your podcast, several of them, when that I really recommend people go back and listen to on trust. Right? Because a lot of trust is dictated by demeanor in the way that we interact with someone and the way we feel comfortable with them over a period of time. So we want to make sure that there's a congruence between the demeanor of someone and the intent of someone, because all of this is tactical, going all the way back to what you said. The negotiation started the minute that I met you, because that was when I was determining what set of tools to use in a particular setting.
Wow, so I'm also seeing or sensing that you would read somebody a lot faster than most people, and that would be an advantage for whatever conversation.
Absolutely. By the way, let me ask you, when's your birthday?
September,
Right.
early
That's
September.
interesting. Now, what did I just learn out of that?
Possibly, if you believe in astrology, a little bit about my
Right.
personality.
Yeah.
What
Now,
else?
if I believe in neuro-linguistic programming, what you would know is this. First of all, do I know that you know your birthday? All of it. Yes, I do. You told me September and you left out a few things, right? The day and the date. So, do I know that you know those things? Yes. Now, when I ask the question, I ask the question out of context. But when's your birthday? Smiling. And you said, September. Now, guess what? Every time I ask you a question when you're surprised and when you want to withhold information, you will do that exact thing. So
Love that.
all I was doing was reading
Yeah.
what happens when you're not being completely candid. And that is a little piece of neuro-linguistic programming. So I am now reading every time I ask a question and I see that reaction. That is a tell. If you were
Yes, of
looking
course
at
it is.
part, it's a tell,
Yeah.
right? So of course I'm going to have more insight, because you had no idea that from that point on, every time you look up to the right or left or whatever you
Yeah.
did, it's telling me three things. One, what your demeanor changed, and two, what part of your brain you were going to look for that information. Was it in the recent past, long past, or all of that? All of that is just by the eye movement of high left, high right, or
Yeah.
straight up where we're going. And so, of course, you're going to have more insight, and the other person is not going to even be aware that that's taking place.
Yeah, so now I feel very guilty that I didn't tell you, but I'm not going to. I'm so sensitive about my age that I don't like
Well,
to.
so am I, but you're
So there you
asking
go.
people.
I
Yeah,
know.
so
No.
but you're asking you and many it's inappropriate. In a lot of instances that
Yeah.
might be inappropriate,
Yeah.
but that's not the purpose of what one
No,
is asking.
I
I'm going
know.
to ask another type of question that would be one. So now I might ask a question that requires that you go back into your long-term memory. So I know where you're going to go look to get that question
Yeah.
from your brain, and the eye movements and the demeanor that you exhibit every time I ask you that type of question, you're going to repeat it. And I'm going to test that several different times. And once I know that I'm reading the tell, it becomes pretty powerful. Now, for a trained negotiator, if you're listening to Chris Voss, Never Split the Difference, he's given you a static rule, never do something, which, by the way, I don't have static rules in evolved
Right.
negotiation, because they create habits. Or so Dr. Karas might say, well, you always have a bat, that you always aim high. Well, I would say, because he said, by the way, don't split the difference 40
Right.
years before Chris said, never split the difference. But in both cases, they're telling you to limit your behavior. Whereas evolved negotiation is going to tell you, nope, sometimes we're a cook, Sometimes we're a baker, and sometimes we're a hybrid, and we throw all of the rules out and make up a rule appropriate for that particular situation. Why? Because in part, we don't want to establish patterns, especially if we're negotiating with people repeatedly or over a long period of time. We want them always guessing
Right.
as to how we're going to respond, or at least not, if we are using a consistent demeanor, we're doing so to establish a pattern so they believe that
Yeah,
is our intent,
attention.
right?
Yeah,
That's
exactly.
strategy. That's
Yeah.
strategy.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Can you share an example of where better questioning or listening dramatically improved the outcome of a negotiation that you maybe
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. That's such a great question. Yes. Over the years, I have learned that far more people, very experienced people, and not, and if you listen closely to people from across the spectrum, more often than not, people ask questions that are yes or no questions. Now, when you ask a yes or no question, what are you doing? Well, from an evolved perspective, you're giving your power away, because when you ask a bilateral yes or no question, you're giving the other person permission to shut you down without having any inquiry. And it's a habit. Do you believe? What do you think? Or I make a statement, and I then, by the tone of my voice, a lot, we see this in California a lot, when you have that valley girl, which is, or guy, which has exploded all over the world, where people ask a question is, don't you think? Or
They go up at the end.
at the end, which is a question mark, right? Which
Yes, correct.
sounds like a question mark. So if I'm asking yes or no questions, I'm actually shutting down the communication, right? So here is a test. What other kind of question that we might we ask?
An open-ended question.
That's right. Now let me share with you and your audience one of the dynamic differences of evolved negotiation. What is an open-ended question?
Something that a question that's saying, how would you do this? Or what's your opinion on this? Or something that gives them an opportunity to say more than just yes or no.
Exactly. So all over the world for eons, open-ended questions have been taught in exactly the way you just explained. So you're sitting down in a negotiation and you just heard Derek Chevalier say, yes or no questions, not a good deal. You're shutting people down. You're closing off. So Janice says, ask an open-ended question. Now, what does your brain do? Your brain goes, oh, an open-ended question is a question that doesn't have a yes or no answer. So it's going to be a question that starts with something like how or what or now. In the meantime, you're sitting in a negotiation across from somebody, and then you get tongue-tied, and the other person is like, yeah, getting lost. And now you just go back to yes or no questions, because open-ended questions have been taught in what we consider a Neanderthal way. So we don't teach that. What we teach is ask Iowa questions.
Ask what
Iowa.
kind?
Iowa questions, like the
Iowa?
state of Iowa,
Okay, okay.
Iowa questions, but it's spell capital W, capital I-I-I-I-H, Iowa. So phonetically, you're saying Iowa.
Okay.
Ask Iowa question. Now, what did I just teach you? I said, ask if, what, where, when, how, who. Now, when you're sitting in a negotiation, your brain is going, ask Iowa question. I don't care which one you ask, just pick one.
Yeah.
If, what, where, when, who. So this is what evolves done that is elevated in terms of everything that's been done before. We've not reinvented it, but we have reinvented it in a way that it is more useful, and it's consistent with your brain. So everybody on this call can go back and listen to that Iowa question. That simply means ask if, what, where, when, how, who, in any order. So you don't have to, I just
Right.
eliminated all the clutter out of it. And there's lots of that's a proprietary element of the evolved framework.
Yeah.
But there are many of things like that that elevate you in a second. Now, when people first start doing this, I can guarantee you they will get tongue-tied.
Yeah.
Gonna start, but in a very, very quickly, you get acclimated to that, and then you learn that even if you start out with a yes or no question, you become able to then pick that up and end with an Iowa question. It is worth its weight in gold to everybody on your call.
Thank you. Well, it's a great place to wrap it up, really, because I know we've talked for a while, and actually, I mean, it goes so fast. We could have another conversation and still not learn it all, I know. But I love that that you had these little tricks of the trade, and that they really are simple things to simple but not easy, and you have to be very aware. And I also believe, which is kind of my I don't know the term, but like my baseline is curiosity. You have to be curious.
Love it.
Yeah, because
Love
it
it. And
really
you had
helps.
a guest on one of your podcasts that talked about the joy of and the importance of curiosity as an adult. You remember that? And he was talking about his kids in the backyard looking at an ant hill or something, and he goes, "You have to be curious." And I was like, "Absolutely." So I'm an old guy, but I'll tell you, I'm 12 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still like, "What is possible? You know, what
Exactly.
can we do?" You
Well, I
know, I
think that
love that.
keeps us young. That's what that
Yes.
does. It keeps us young. So I love it. So I think the reminder about understanding people, asking thoughtful questions, focusing on the values that we bring to the relationship and to the negotiation is really important. And I just want to thank you for sharing your insights and experience with us today. Where can people find you? And I will put it in the show notes.
Thank you so much, because I really enjoyed our conversation. Went by quick. So listen, I would really encourage people. We want to sell some books, and Evolve or Be Slaughtered is on Amazon and every other place. We've got a 4.9 rating on Amazon and 5.0 independent reviews that have been really, really flattering, and I'm so grateful and humbled for. So that's one. But I will also say this. We offer a 30-minute, no cost, no BS, no obligation call. So if people have a question, you just go on the website, h-c.com, or on my LinkedIn profile, and you can get to the website from there and just schedule a call. And we're not going to sell you anything, but we may be able to give you some action pointers. You'll ask, like, what's the issue? What are you looking to do? And in a quick turnaround, say, hey, you might want to consider A, B, C, D. Now, a lot of times, what happens, people will implement that strategy or take that and never call back.
Sure.
But also, there are plenty of people that will take that. Go out and say, you know what, maybe there's something else I can learn here. And they'll get the book or they'll call back, and we certainly do consulting and training out of that. So do it. Just ask a question, or else, call up and teach me something I don't know. That'd be great too. I'd
That's
love that
fantastic.
too.
Yeah, that's great. I love that too. I love that you have access to you and learn and meet new people and find new
Yeah.
things out and open a new door, perhaps. One never
Yes.
knows. So I encourage my audience to do that. I will put all that info in the show notes. And again, thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, please let us know. And remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.